that the investment portfolio remains sufficiently liquid to meet our projected cash flow needs. And then lastly, the investment portfolio is designed to achieve the highest rate of return given, you know, those constraints of preservation of principal and also our liquidity needs. Authorized officers for the investment policy, the executive director, chief of finance, deputy chief of finance, and controller. So again, I'll discuss again the changes again are mostly clarifications of existing practices that we already have. We just wanted to update the policy to make sure it conformed with the Public Funds Act. So we added just additional language. So some of the changes would be we added to the selection of authorized broker dealers and investment advisors. We basically updated the section to state that the treasurer is responsible for the selection of financial institutions for the tollway, and that the tollway is authorized to invest in or to hire investment advisors in accordance with our state procurement.
That would be rules. The treasurer of the state of Illinois.
The treasurer of the state of Illinois. So we just updated the policy to add that. We also clarified a section under terms and term and diversification to identify funds that have longer-term liquidity needs that they can be invested for greater than 1 year. I think we've previously stated that, you know, most of the funds are invested in short-term, and they will continue to be mostly invested in short-term investments. But there will be some funds that we identify that possibly have a longer-term liquidity need that we can want to push out a little further. And then we lastly updated the review and reporting section to incorporate the fact that we do have a periodic review internally. Chief of Finance reviews the portfolio. And we also added that we will review the portfolio no less than once every 2 years to provide any additional updates. Okay. So as Mike and Christy mentioned that we wanted to have a discussion, as you know, and as you saw in the first quarter presentation, investment rates, the investment account continues to generate a low amount of income because of short-term rates. It's expected short-term rates will continue to be low. And one of the considerations is probably to push for legislation that will allow us another option of investing in municipal securities. Right now, all of the municipalities can invest in municipals. The tollway is not allowed to do that under the Public Funds Act. So that would provide, you know, another option to try to increase our investment return. And also we'd like to, again, as we mentioned, take some of the projected cash flows on the portfolios and move some of those investments out a little further from, you know, less than 1 year to greater than 1 year that will provide us, again, some additional income, but with that it comes with some additional risk as well.
So the portfolio now is primarily in Treasury?
The portfolio is right primarily in government securities. We have money market funds that are invested in money market funds, the underlying securities in those money market funds are government securities.
Not municipal,
correct.
The Public Funds Act excluded us before. Why did they exclude us?
It's the Public Funds Act basically states that it just states that municipalities are allowed to invest in municipals. It does not address the tollway.
So we were specifically excluded. It just doesn't address
it. It just doesn't address it. Yeah, that's probably a better way to say it. Yeah.
So does that mean we're not prohibited?
The authorization for investment in municipal bonds excluded state agencies, and the way is considered.
So we are excluded.
We are excluded, but not specifically, but as a part of the state agency.
Right now we're already with 6 basis points, is that what
Pretty much.
And those, because that's short-term investing that we're...
So, quite frankly, some of the money market funds
zero.
After fees are zero.
Yeah, which is a good portion of our portfolio, which we'll be sending around a report showing the investments and how they are.
But back to your original statement, you know, fiduciary responsibility is to protect the principal, you know,
that's
at
correct.
All costs.
That's correct.
So why would we be in money markets that have the fees, meaning not fees that we pay directly, but fees that are taken out of their investment return for
right.
But why?
I think all of them have.
But why wouldn't we just be in no money market funds, therefore no fees? Just straight buying government funds?
We would have to have overnight repurchase agreements, I guess. We want the money to be liquid on a daily basis, is really the answer.
So we're paying for the fees pay us pay for the liquidity.
That's not the industry's not going to pay us to put your money in our.
Well, Mr. Banker.
Yeah, that's what's the reverse here.
Oh, well, you're at the bank too.
So you got to pay us to protect the money. That's what's going. That's what's everything's reversed.
I mean, we could real to add more color to that. I mean, we could take some of that portfolio and invest it in 3 month and 6 month and 9 month and 12 month treasuries, but the rates, even for those investments, are so low that we've determined that it doesn't warrant that. You know,
Could you broke down the dollars basically as far as liquidity, 30, 60, 90 days and out as far as...
We've done some with this. Bill, you can speak to this as well. We've done some purchases of treasury securities that are laddered for the debt service funds out a year in our debt service funds to match when we make payments for principal and interest payments.
Actually, and some out 2.5 years.
Okay.
We started to go out a little bit into that reserve account and obtain, I think, you know, yield return more like 30 to 40 basis points.
Okay. Better than 6.
Yeah.
It's still pretty conservative.
But that's for the debt reserve account. For all, we also have a large amount of money in debt service accounts where we owe 6 months, every 6 months in interest, every 12 months in principal. And so there we're really contained within that 1 year time frame where the returns are, you know, close to zero.
So part of our struggle on the duration, I suppose, of the investments is more on the treasury held funds. Should we go to the treasurer's office and ask them to seek investments that are 2, 3, 4, 5 years? For some portion of that money that they hold. And the concern we've had is that short-term interest rates are going to rise. And if short-term interest rates rise and we've invested out 2, 3, 4, or 5 years, the market value of those investments decreases. So we could show negative returns.
So it's like kind of like locking into a 4 or 5 year CD. Right, for the average consumer, and then, you know, sometime in that period, you know, some other investment might look better.
Right.
Right? But you're locked into the,
and we have to mark to market.
That's a little bit.
Right. Those lines. Yeah.
And we keep hearing that short-term rates are going to increase.
We all keep hearing.
Do we need to take any action on your?
We need to vote on the investment policy. So that's when we don't, the debt management guidelines are just guidelines, but we do have to formally vote on the investment policy. I think one question that we had was, again, whether the board's kind of comfortable with the approach that we have. If you'd like to see us lock in for longer periods of time, you know, the 4 or 5 year example, or if it's really not worth the risk of missing, you know, a market opportunity if short-term interest rates rise. I think we'd still be pretty modest investment income, even from those longer term periods, correct? So that was one question. If you're just comfortable with us kind of staying the course, or if you'd like to see us lock in a little longer. And then I think Kathy mentioned, and I'm sorry I'm out of the room, but a little bird told me that she mentioned during her presentation that, you know, we do have some legislation that restricts the types of investment vehicles that we can invest in. currently. And so, you know, one thing that we could do, not this session, but in upcoming sessions, is prioritize, it's one of our priority initiatives, changing that legislation that would give us a little bit more flexibility, you know, not to put everything into the hottest tech stock necessarily, but to have a little bit more flexibility in a range of investments that are still pretty safe. I think municipal, municipal bonds, et cetera, which we're currently prohibited from investing in. It would give us, we think, a little better return on our investment, but would probably likely be a heavy legislative lift, quite frankly, as the General Assembly in the past has been reticent to, you know, give that flexibility because they maybe see more risk there, or, you know, understandably. So those are, I think, two questions. There might be others that I'm not thinking of, but two questions from a policy perspective.
I'm comfortable with the current path we're on, more conservative path, and not going out long-term on investments there. As far as seeking approval to go into other investment tools and funds, you know, I don't, to your point about going to the General Assembly to get that approval, it's a very challenging task, and I think that we stay the course like we've done so far. I feel very comfortable with that, but I don't know what the other board members, what their thoughts are.
I agree. I wouldn't make a change right now with all the work it would take. It distract us from what we really have to do, and it wouldn't really make us that much of a difference on the income side.
Okay. So we're comfortable with that.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're glad you asked.
Okay. Anything else, Christy?
No, nothing else for me. Thank you, Chair.
I'm going to go to John Procurement. You've got several items.
The finance item.
Oh, sorry. I jumped over finance. Sorry about that, Mike.
Just right there.
You're done with them already. My computer's jumping around. Might be able to. Finance approval of the updated investment policy.
Right, correct.
And so we need a motion. Any further discussion on that? Motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion passes. Moves to the full board consent agenda. Thanks again. Thanks, Mike. Procurement now, John.
Good morning, everyone. All right, now for the real exciting items. Okay, so we have five items for consideration this morning. The first item is a request to utilize a CMS master contract to purchase Cisco SmartNet software and hardware maintenance support and upgrades. This contract provides 24/7 maintenance and support from Cisco certified professionals for all of our Cisco devices used throughout the Tollways network. This agreement includes software upgrades, patch releases, and on-site technical support to resolve any issues that may arise. Award is recommended to AT&T Datacom Incorporated in a total amount not to exceed $1,139,596.86 for a three-year period. Any questions or statements?
This was a sole source?
No, this was an order against a CMS master contract.
Or against a master contract.
That's correct. Pretty routine. This is our SmartNet maintenance for all of our Cisco equipment. Okay. Second item is an award of a TOEI request for proposal to purchase ERP, Independent Verification and Validation Services, also known as ERP IV&V. Now, this contract is the second of at least three related to our ERP initiative. As you may recall, the first procurement for ERP advisory services was awarded at our January board meeting. The awarded vendor's primary role is to ensure that all of the TOEI's requirements are included in the program. The procurement process yielded eight proposals, and after two phases of scoring, Grant Thornton was the highest scoring vendor. One item to note is that this is our first contract that includes a veterans subcontracting goal. So CMS promulgated rules recently which allow us to place veterans subcontracting goals on our procurements which have an adequate amount of certified veteran businesses in the category being solicited. Award is recommended to Grant Thornton LLP in a total amount not to exceed $3,321,600 for a four-year initial term.
Can you walk me through this again? This explain the Enterprise Resource Planning Independent Verification and Validation Services. It's a long, wordy title.
Yeah, no, it's kind of confusing. So, again, the ERP advisor procurement that the board approved back in January, that's the vendor that has been hired through our initiative to gather all the requirements from all of our user departments. So they're understanding all of our requirements, so then when we put an RFP out for the solution later this fall, that's when we tell the world, here's what we're looking for in the system. So now today, the IVNV vendor, what they're going to do is make sure that all of our requirements are included in that solution. So they're making sure the advisor doesn't miss anything that we're looking for or that we need.
So they're kind of another advocate for us in the process.
Right.
So the ERP system, as you may recall, is, you know, over the years, we rely for all of our accounting and kind of the operational functions here at the Tollway on an old mainframe system. It's very manual. You'll note, and I know that Director Gonzalez can attest to, as being on the audit committee, you know, almost every year in our external audit, we have some audit findings related to, you know, some, you know, frankly, manual error that when you are have a person who's trying to remember to enter something on one spreadsheet or in one system and then manually go into another one and edit or add or subtract the same thing, there are manual errors that can occur. So, you know, frankly, most organizations, even governments of and public sector entities of our size, have a large system that kind of seamlessly allows all of these different functions, you know, finance and, you know, invoicing and budget and all of these different things to talk to each other seamlessly, so you don't have the opportunity for those types of manual errors. So we are finally catching up with the rest of the world and working to implement an ERP system here. So, and this is just, you know, one of the, so just to remind everyone of that background of what an ERP system is as well.
Right. No, I thought that was a good characterization. Again, this vendor is just making sure that all of our requirements that we stated are going to be included in the solution at the end of the day.
So it's a very, very complex process, yes. Is the message we're getting, and
it
we
is.
Need somebody who's had an experience of looking at large organizations, not from the inside the way we do, but from the outside.
Right, somebody that's independent.
To make sure that we've got everything covered.
And to make sure that the vendors who are presenting the solutions actually have, you know, people, vendors can also, you know, say that they have, you know, a solution or a specific product that maybe hasn't been tested or maybe isn't quite what's represented, right? So this would help with that as well. So what we can do is, I know that when we have our next audit committee meeting, it's probably time for us to give an ERP update generally, so we can put together kind of an update on the progress that we're making on that solicitation and make sure everybody knows where we stand, but we're happy to finally have this service
we
on
are.
Board.
I know
hopefully
Prasad's
on board.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
and Grant Thornton was the only one that basically met or exceeded the threshold?
So there was 8 proposals and 2 rounds of scoring. After the first phase of scoring, there was 2 vendors, Grant Thornton and CSG was the second vendor. Then after both vendors came in for the oral presentations, only Grant Thornton scored high enough to be considered for award. So, and we are confident and comfortable with Grant Thornton's proposal, and we're exciting and moving forward with them.
And they're providing these kind of type of services for other public entities also?
Yes, they are.
Are authorities of like kind?
Yes. Prasad, do you know any specific?
Yeah, I have a list here. They work for state and government agencies in New York, California, Texas, Florida, Pennsylvania, Georgia. And public sector transportation focuses in Texas, Pennsylvania, New Jersey Turnpike, Pennsylvania Turnpike, Mass.
So definitely big ones.
But are they doing ERPs, or are they just employed by them doing something else? Grant Thornton does a whole bunch.
No, actually specific to ERP and independent verification validation.
So the services that we're seeking award on this contract.
May I ask a question about the veteran's preference? What's the process? First of all, what are the criteria? Is that veteran-owned company, and is it like MBE where there's a certification process?
There is a certification process. So in order to be a certified veteran-owned business with the state, 51% of your ownership, the owner has to reside here in Illinois, Illinois-based company. And I can't recall, Gustavo, do you recall the income limit on the veterans?
No, I don't.
There's a cap. I can't remember the cap. It's not coming to me right now. But so the state goes through a certification process, and they have a reciprocity agreement. So if you're certified veterans with the feds or Cook County, we'll accept that recognition certification.
Which is similar to what happens with other MBE,
right.
MBEW.
That is similar, yes, it is. So one thing to note, there was some legislation, I think, passed in 2011 that states that as a goal, state agency goal, not less than 3% of our spend as a goal, you know, be awarded to veteran-owned businesses. So CMS, you know, promulgated rules recently that allow us to implement that program, and this is the first procurement in which we place that goal. Now, CMS's direction and policy is if there's two or more veteran-owned businesses in a given category, we are allowed to place a goal, a veteran's goal. If not, we don't place a goal because there's not, the market's not big enough. And since it's such a new program in the state, there's only 73, I checked last night, 73 registered veteran-owned businesses in the state, and that's throughout the whole state across all industries. So just trying to give you the landscape here, because most of our contracts are not going to have goals right now because the market's not big enough. We need to fill in that database. So I know the state is doing all kinds of outreach to veterans right now, and we're trying to fill up that database so we could have more goals in our procurements.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
So we're excited about this. And the vendor, Grant Thornton, here is committing to the veterans goal and the 20% BEP goal.
And we know the governor will be very excited about
that. Yes, because when he named me chair, that was one of the things he said pay attention to and try to do something with. Get more veterans involved.
Absolutely.
So, thank you.
Sure. Any other discussion, or should we go ahead and move? Okay. So the third item is a request to exercise our fourth and final renewal option of our PBX phone maintenance services contract. This renewal will allow us continued maintenance and support of our PBX phone system and equipment for an additional year. The vendor is committing to the 30% BEP goal for this period. Award is recommended to Structured Technologies Incorporated, doing business as Marin Structured Technologies, in a total amount not to exceed $231,232.30 for the one-year renewal period. Fourth item is a 120-day emergency extension of our traffic and security monitoring and management system maintenance contract. This contract extension allows us to continue maintenance support while we complete the RFP process to replace it. Some of the items included in this contract are the closed-circuit TV cameras along our roadway, microwave radar detectors, dynamic and portable message signs. The vendor is committing to the 30% BEP goal for this period. Award is recommended to Mead Electric Company Incorporated in a total amount not to exceed $300,000 for the 120-day term. So we have an RFP on the street already seeking these services, and this extension will allow us to go through that process. Okay. The fifth and final item is an award of a tollway sole source contract to purchase plaza intercom and panic panel replacements. This contract provides a source for a total of 5 sets of plaza intercom and panic switching panels. So these devices are needed to enable a two-way communication from our plaza supervisors to our toll collector booths. Awarded is recommended to Dytronics Corporation in a total amount not to exceed $74,454 for this one-time purchase. Any questions?
Any questions? There being no questions, any opposition to taking all 5 of these items together? Okay, under procurement items 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, or a motion to approve? Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes, moves to the full consent agenda. Full board. John, I have a question. I want to follow up on the memos we get on a monthly basis on the small purchase threshold. What I'd like is maybe a quarterly kind of overview of the vendors as far as breakout, like IT, engineering. I'd like to look at it as a whole for the quarter and see what we're spending on individual vendors, because some of them, you know, I see some redundancy, and I'm trying to match up with the larger contracts that are being awarded and reviewed in more detail.
So by vendors, by department?
Yes, and okay. Just quarterly, if you could provide that to the committee, that would be helpful.
So do you want, if a vendor has been, because these are orders against master contracts, so some vendor may be, have more than one master contract, so do you, I think we'd want to provide it by, so that it's an individual contract, right, but then you also want to see it by vendor so that you'd see the cumulative amount to a vendor?
That would be helpful, yeah, that would be helpful if that's possible. I don't know if you have the software to do that or not, but I'm just looking for, you know, you see these on a monthly basis, but it's hard to look at them as a whole, I have to sit down and add everything up and look at everything, so I wanted to get a system or a spreadsheet that had that already.
We don't have something that, we could give you something, that's for sure. I mean, obviously the ERP system that we're looking forward to, that will definitely be the system, but we could pull some data together.
Okay.
So what you're trying to figure out is whether purchases under a certain amount that we don't see end up accumulating over a quarter or a year.
Well, you see them. Right.
We see everything.
Not,
yes,
that doesn't
I'm sorry.
Initially.
We don't see them. Right.
I just want to say, sometimes there are emergency orders in here, and then I, you know, projects we've reviewed, and I say, oh, in addition to, we had a $30,000 extra on this, and I just try to put it all.
Yep.
Okay. Sure.
We can. Thank you. That.
No problem.
Engineering, Paul.
Good morning, Director.
Good morning.
Ask you to redirect your attention from liquidity swaps and basis points to
concrete.
What is primarily the dirt and concrete. So I have 18 items this morning. Items 1, 2, and 4, we're not requesting any action on, and I'll explain why. Item 1, this is a construction contract. We did receive 4 bids. 3 of the bidders had to be deemed non-responsive. And it was for various reasons. So we're going to probably, we are canceling this contract, and we're going to re-advertise it and seek new bids on it.
On item 1?
On item number 1. On item number 2, this is a construction contract which has a bid opening scheduled for this morning. So provided we get, bids that are valid and acceptable, we will be recommending board take action on this next week.
Okay.
Item number 3, this is a construction contract award. It's for installation of a dynamic message sign. It's going to go on northbound I-39 approaching the Cherry Valley Interchange at I-90. And it's also going to extend the fiber optic cable along the Jane Addams Memorial Tollway to support our intelligent transportation system equipment. We received 2 bids on this contract. The award is recommended to William Charles, who is the low bidder, at $1,396,425.40. And you see that they have committed to exceed our DBE goal.
So this is on 39?
It's going to be on IDOT right away, and I believe we're going to have an intergovernmental agreement that's going to be presented under a legal's agenda, which pertains to this. So it's our customers who are traveling up on I-39 before they get to I-90.
And so do you want action on this at this meeting or no?
Yes.
You're asking for us to consider this?
Yes.
The only people who could look at the sign are the ones that are going to get on the
public.
Okay.
We have the general, the public's general interest.
I appreciate it. You're absolutely right.
So item 4. This is a construction contract award, which we are going to defer for the time being because we have a DBE waiver request, which requires us to follow a process in order to evaluate it. Diversity is working on it right now. If it is evaluated in time to bring it next week, we will do it then. If not, we will consider bringing it next month. If it doesn't get approved, then we'll probably be canceling this one. So that's it. 1, 2, and 4, we won't take action on that. Item 5, this is a construction contract award. It's for the removal and reconstruction of the Tyrol Road Bridge over I-90. It's in our I-90 West Corridor. We've received 5 bids on this contract. The award is recommended to Bennett Bay, who's the low bidder at $4,735,760.01. They are committed to meeting our DBE commitment goal on this contract. Item number 6, this is a construction contract award. It's for removal and replacement of the Church Road Bridge over the Reagan Memorial Tollway, and also for doing some various structural repairs system-wide. We got 5 bids on this contract, and the award is recommended for lower construction. It's a low bidder at $4,722,164.25. They've also committed to meeting our DBE goals.
Comfortable with the engineer's estimate versus the award amount?
So we have some additional repairs, structural repairs spread throughout our system that are being addressed also in this Church Road Bridge contract. So in the past, we've seen where the contractors, when they have to move around from place to place, they typically include additional mobilization costs in there. So the engineer was hesitant to lower his estimates because he knows that there is some of that going on in this contract, so he wanted to make sure that he was covering that adequately. But that is the primary explanation for the difference between the two. I mean, obviously we got
a very good
price compared to the engineer's estimate.
Helps with a good workout. They mobilize the stage and save about $1.5 million.
So that's it for the construction contract awards. I had the next two items are supplements. Item 7 is a supplement in the amount of $177,468.41. And this is to provide for additional design services under contract 4042, which is with Alfred Benish. They're a design consultant. In this case, these additional services are going to include updating the contract plans for construction contract 4621, which is on the Elgin O'Hare Western Access Corridor program. And it's basically for the redesign of Park Boulevard and Pierce Road and Hamilton Lakes Drive. Originally, we anticipated that this work was going to be done in 2014. We need more time to work out the utility relocations and also make sure the land acquisition activities are completed. So we need them to update the plan so that it fits into the 2015 construction schedule. And that's what this work calls.
So it's at our request that they're making changes to the scope of work because we're adding additional scope. So.
We couldn't, they completed the design. We had intended to advertise it. We need more time to do the right of way and utilities. So we have asked them to update it to fit into the 2015 work. Item number 8, this is also a supplement in the amount of $190,720 under contract 1234R with Gil Bain. This supplement is going to provide some additional funding for this consultant to extend their construction auditor services, which is basically they're going to perform some additional site observations, audits, and field testing on selected projects in 2014.
So we added back in material testing that wasn't originally in the scope?
No, we've expanded it
to
include some work that's going to occur this year.
So some of this is driven by the fact, as you may recall, and I'm not sure we've had the discussion in this committee, but I know that we have an audit. Our internal audit division was going to hire a dedicated construction auditor within its team. We haven't brought that person on board yet, and likely won't, just given the length of trying to find someone and then hiring someone for this summer. So some of this is to accommodate what that person who would be our internal staff person would be doing if we had them on board.
This is the largest year in our construction program,
right.
So we'd like to keep them on board through this year.
Okay.
Item number 9, this is a request for approval to develop and implement a workforce hiring initiative. That's going to ensure access to employment opportunities on full-way construction projects. It's going to be subject to the special revision that we will prepare and include in our future contracts. Approval of this item will allow the chief engineer to work with the chief of diversity on implementing such a program.
This was a resolution. Was this a General Assembly resolution? Was this a...
I think it's our resolution.
It is. We're seeking the board to grant us approval to develop and implement this program.
And tell me a little bit more about the program.
So this is a partnership with the Urban League and the Illinois Department of Transportation. The Illinois Department of Transportation is funding a program at the Urban League. This allows us, we're not actually funding the Urban League program because it's already funded through IDOT, but this would allow us that graduates from this program, it's kind of a pre-apprentice training program, so graduates come out ready to go into apprenticeship programs in the various building trades and ultimately have jobs on various projects in the region. So this would allow us to have the same type of wage subsidy for any of those graduates coming on and working on tollway programs to offer that as are offered through IDOT. And I'm not sure if other partners offer it, but certainly the Illinois Department of Transportation does. So we don't see this as a huge cost. You know, it's a handful of, you know, how many people graduated from the program?
So far, approximately 250-some people have graduated.
And only some smaller portion of those or future graduates would maybe end up on tollway jobs because they can go on, you know, other construction projects on tollway. They can, you know, many, many different private sector or other public sector projects. So, but it does give us, you know, one more tool to try to increase the amount of opportunities for diverse workforce on tollway projects.
Don't we already have a relationship with your clients?
We're working on a separate arrangement with the Urban League for technical assistance to contractors.
Uh-huh.
That will cover that end,
okay.
That end of the equation.
But we don't
have
that
for
right
workforce?
Now.
No, not yet.
I thought we had at one point approved the Urban League and ASEA as two
neither
technical advisors,
no,
but we've
no.
never had an actual formal agreement with them.
No, we're conversations.
Okay, thank you. So this gives us the authority to go ahead, but it isn't, there's...
Well, it all depends on, well, I think, you know, our cost, we estimate somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe as much as $50,000 in a given year. It could be a little higher or lower, depending on how many of these graduates end up working on tollway projects.
And does $50,000 go through the Urban League to support them, or
no.
is that something that goes through the contract?
It goes through, yeah, exactly. It goes
okay.
from the tollway to the contractor.
I see. So
they have hired that individual.
So it's the Urban League that provides the workers. We end up supporting their employment with the contractors initially.
Right. The Urban League provides the pre-apprenticeship training through a number of community partners they have on this contract to provide the actual training program,
uh-huh.
and they also do the recruitment and the referral as well.
And IDA financially supports that program?
Yeah.
Right. So
we get the benefit of
their investment in the program, and you know they get another outlet or opportunity, group of opportunities for graduates from the program to be employed.
That a skill set trade that we would be
right
to hire through their. Our program, so it's not okay. Is there a commitment to hiring?
I could hear that.
Is there a commitment to hiring so many individuals, or
by the contractors, you know, or
by both?
The contractors have. We've been promoting the program, doing some sort of preliminary conversations with contractors on some of the more sensitive areas of our system, and they're very receptive to hire. Actually, they are asking for some of these hires. And so we're beginning to the referral process as we speak. Literally, we're kind of like beginning to already work with these contractors. But it is a voluntary program in nature. The contractors have the choice of hiring these graduates or not hiring them. So it's ultimately the decision of the contractor to hire those people, just like we do in all our.
But it's I think one of the innovative and interesting things about this program is that the unions are also very much at the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have a vested interest in. Hopefully the success of the outcome, because it's the unions that need to be able also to accept, in some cases, people into their apprenticeship programs, because there's still sometimes a significant apprenticeship program
right.
that would follow this type of training. So I believe most of the graduates last time around were placed, not necessarily on tollway jobs,
right.
but you know were placed in different positions, and you know we'll see more as the program unfolds.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 10, this is a extra work order in the amount of $1,492,000. This is on contract 4126 with William Charles Construction. It's related to schedule recovery and achieving the substantial completion date for our work on this contract. I did a presentation at last month's board. I discussed how we had incurred some delays on these I-90 West contracts. We're still working very hard to make sure we get all the contracts back on schedule. This is one of the last ones to receive, you know, this type of extra work order change order to address these delays that were incurred. I mean, the primary purpose is we want to do what's right for our customers.
So the delays were incurred because of weather.
Yeah, the
right?
delays were incurred due to weather. We want to work with the contractor, and we're directing them to get back on schedule. In order to do that, They will have to employ additional equipment, work longer shifts, pay for premium time, and increase their supervision so that they can, you know, increase their production rates. And that's what William Charles has committed to do on this. And William Charles is also committed to applying the overall DB goal to this additional work that they're going to be doing.
I have a question, because I see several of these change order or extra work orders. And I think from you told me that October 15th is the substantial completion date that you put in these contracts. Why October 15th? Why not November 1st? Why not November 15th? And then secondly, what's the cost? Have you done a cost-benefit analysis on paying for the contractors for the extra time, personnel, staging, equipment, versus if you extended this out an additional 2 weeks for substantial completion to the end of the month or the first 2 weeks of November, or if you carried over into the next construction cycle? So I'm trying to understand, looking for the extra dollars for these contractors, what's the cost-benefit analysis look like?
So the reason why I have recommended these extra work orders on all the I-90 West contracts is really twofold. One is because it's in the best interest of our customers, and two is because it makes the most financial sense for us. Getting towards that substantial completion date, I could talk about how, you know, we do not want to have our customers go through construction zones or maintenance of traffic in winter months. And in order to achieve that goal, we need to put down our striping before the weather turns poor. And the striping has a very specific specification requirement, 40 degrees.
For curing?
Yes. So we had pushed, this is the lessons learned from our past program, we had pushed to try to, and we've learned from experience that targeting the work for October makes the most sense and gives us the best opportunity to get that final striping completed.
If you put, you know, I know last year was kind of an aberration with the winter. We had snow in November.
Yes.
Most Novembers are pretty moderate temperature-wise. If you did push it back from October 15th to October 31st or the first week of November, can we get some of this work done without having to pay the additional cost?
So we'd run into trouble. Okay. We can potentially run into trouble. And if we don't, and obviously the size of this extra work order means I'm paying to accelerate a lot more work activities than just the striping operation. I mean, they have a lot of work to get done in the 5.5 months that are available to do it. Pushing some or part of all this work into the next year is going to at least double the cost of the toll rate of this work. At minimum, it will double it. It could be higher than that. And some of the costs that aren't really considered in this evaluation are the cost to our customers, too. We lose revenue when we have construction on our system. And I heard you ask that question when you asked Mike about the loss of revenue in the first quarter. Anytime we have construction on the system, our traffic engineer provides us with a loss of revenue calculation, so we know that every day is costing us, and on this corridor, about $5,000 a day. In addition, there's user delays. So when people have to take longer amounts of time to travel from one place to another, they incur costs. Those costs are typically estimated at $15 an hour and it results in millions. We aren't incurring those costs directly, but our customers are. So we have really pushed and to meet the schedules as we promoted it. This schedule was included in our Move Illinois program when we introduced it in 2011. I know it makes the most sense for the tollway to get the work done in this manner because it results in less cost in the long run.
So basically, I mean, the costs are going to be greater. If we extend it out, we run the next construction cycle, you're talking about doubling your costs.
Yeah, so the additional costs that we incur are, first thing that will happen is we probably have to put some type of temporary striping down. And the striping will not last through the winter, so we'll be back out there at least a couple times replacing it. The second thing that will happen is the job will have to demobilize. So the contractor has to put all of his operations in a condition that is acceptable to last through the winter. And then we have to pay him to remobilize it all in the next year to start up again. He bid the job to be done in 2014, so we will expose ourselves to potentially additional escalation costs related to his material, equipment, and labor. Those escalation costs are currently averaging about 2.5%. So if we're talking about millions of dollars, 2.5% will add up very quickly. Another thing that will also happen is, you know, the contractor himself, and you will hear about this in a later item on this agenda, will incur additional general condition costs, which he will say, "Tollway, I didn't cause this delay in the work. I did it, you know, assuming that the work would be done in 2014 as you anticipated, and having my people out for additional time does result in an additional cost to me," and they will expect to be compensated for that also.
And I think that overarching and important point, I think this is something very important for the board to know, where do we stand relative to the overall budget for the project? So even with some of this extra work that we're paying for to stay on schedule, we've already talked about the cost of not staying on schedule, which could be significant exposure for us. Generally speaking, we're still in pretty good shape budget-wise, correct?
Yes, we're $5 million under on the corridor. I mean, we have a very, you know, robust process for managing the budget. It starts at the project level, then it goes to a corridor level, then it can go to a program level. But as far as just, you know, within the I-90 West corridor, just from Elgin Toll Plaza out to I-39, we're still within budget. Additionally, our budget includes not only the construction costs, it includes right-of-way, utilities, and engineering. As these jobs get completed, and you've seen it in some of the final releases of retainage, there will be monies balancing change orders and extra work orders that will be returned to the tollway, and we also don't expect to spend as much on utility and the right-of-way as we had initially projected. But right now in the books, we're showing that we're still with $5 million under budget, just within the I-90 West. Overall, in the whole corridor, we're probably even more under budget than that.
Good. Any follow-up on that? Anybody else? Thanks for the explanation. Thank you.
Okay. Item number 11. This is a change order extra work order in the amount of $655,014.12 on contract 4134 to R.W. Dunteman. And in last month's presentation, I also talked about how we provided the contractors with options for pavement construction. This was based on lessons learned in 2013. We know we had poor soils in this section of I-90, exposing the ground to wet weather did result in some of the delays that we incurred. So we came up with a modified construction method, which we're allowing our contractors to take advantage of. And in fact, they want, R.W. Dunteman did not work on our corridor last year. They had seen the light and wanted to take advantage of this just based on their 2-week experience over the last 2 weeks where it's been raining, and they saw what it could happen, what it could do to the schedule. So they want to take advantage of it now. This will build, actually, it will not only return them to schedule, I believe it's going to add some additional float to the schedule, so we'll be able to insure ourselves against any future delays on this contract. So engineering is recommending it, and they have also committed to apply their original contract DB goal to this extra work.
So they'll meet the DB commitment, or is it under review still?
They have issued us a letter on this that said they're going to meet this commitment. The next three items are all related to the same contract. It's contract 4000. It's on I-90 and 47. The new interchange that we built there. I want you to know, we entered into an intergovernmental agreement to build this interchange. We share costs with IDOT, the Village of Huntley, the counties of Kane and McHenry. In that intergovernmental agreement, we thought the construction was gonna be $45 million. Our bids came in really, really good on this contract. And completing this work this month, we're going to end up at $37 million. So overall, we've delivered this contract on time, and it's well within our established budget that we had, at least, you know, as we anticipated when we entered into our intergovernmental agreement. But this first item, item number 12, this is an extra work order to Plody, who is a contractor on this contract, in the amount of $607,730.90. This is to handle the increased costs that they and their subconsultants incurred due to an extension of 4 months. We had to extend this contract 4 months. It did not go through a winter season, thankfully. We didn't have to extend it into through a winter season. But we did need additional time to finish up our land acquisition activity. So they had to redo some of their work, and they had to postpone some of their work, which extended an additional 4 months. So they're seeking compensation for their additional overhead, their additional labor that they incurred, and their additional equipment remobilization costs. This contract is going to exceed the DV commitment when all said and done, and you'll see that on the last item.
Has the land acquisition been completed now, or is it still holding up?
No. It only delayed 4 months at the beginning of this contract.
Okay.
It translated into an extension of 4 months at the end.
But the land acquisition is still in progress?
No, it's
completed.
Done.
Completed.
That's what I wanted. It's completed.
Yep, it's okay. Completed. Item number 13 is another extra work order to Plody Construction in the amount of $694,587.60. This extra work order provides for the work related to 55,126 cubic yards of excess topsoil that they had to address in this contract that was not included in the original contract plans. I will say that Plody, so we had 55,000 extra cubic yards of work to do out there, and Plody wanted it to be paid for at one of the higher unit prices in the contract for doing this type of earthwork, and it would have resulted in $1 million change order. And we've negotiated with them, and they've agreed to accept the lower price for this work. And we worked with them also to try to incorporate some of this excess soil into the final interchange configuration, so it did save us some money. So now item 14, this is the final release of the payment on that contract. So this contract is completed, it's accepted by the tollway, all the work is done. They're exceeding their DD commitment, looks like by roughly 0.86%. We want to return the $50,000 that we're holding in the Keenage right now. Item 15, this is a request for final release of retainage in the amount of $110,240.47. It's on construction contract 4132, which we have with Dunnet Bay. This work is also completed. The DD forms have been submitted and are being evaluated, so that's still pending, but we see no reason for that to hold up the release of retainage. Item number 16 is another final release of retainage for completed work. We want to return $275,843.19 on construction contract 5649R. That's our contract with Kern Contracting. They completed this work 32 miles on I-90. It is finishing up within budget. There is a DV shortfall, which has been reviewed by the diversity department and has been accepted. The last two items deal with land acquisition activities, which typically we defer to the full board's executive session before consideration.
I'm okay with that. Any concerns or objections to that? We'll defer those to the full board. Any questions on any items discussed? Any further review? Any objection to taking these all together? No.
I think you've got a
recusal.
Yeah, and you got some. You got to make sure on 1, 2, 3, and 4. You're only dealing with three.
1, 2, and 4.
One.
17 and 18.
So we're going to take items 3, 5, 6. Is there a recusal?
You go 5 through 14 then as a single.
On your
hard
copy agenda, I think noted.
All right. So 3, we're gonna take 3. 5 through 14. Very motion approved.
Second.
All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Moves to the full board consent agenda. So now that was through 15 through 16.
We'll do 15.
15
with Director Darcy.
Director Darcy, recusal.
Okay, is there a motion to approve item 15?
So moved.
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And Director Darcy recuses on item 15. Motion passes with a full consent board. Item 16, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Move the full consent board agenda. Items 17 and 18 will be deferred to exec at the full board. And that's it for engineering. Thank you, Paul. Legal has several intergovernmental agreements.
Thanks, Director. Good morning. Three IGAs, the first one being with the Cook County Department of Transportation. The tollway is in possession of 640 obsolete concrete barrier walls, and Cook County is interested in taking those in an as-is condition. The tollway will not be using these any longer due to federal highway safety standards, which these are now subpar. Cook County has assured us these will not be used for traffic maintenance. They have other purposes, including around flood-prone areas, and the tollway will be fully indemnified for anything happening with these barrier walls after, you know, with Cook County.
So if Cook County does use it, we're not liable for anything?
Correct.
Okay.
A week too late.
Sorry?
They're a week too late.
I hope you're right.
Is there any value? There's no value to these at all for recyclable materials or anything? So dollar amount value is zero? It's just the light kind?
These would otherwise be destroyed and become landfill, I believe.
Okay.
Number two is IGA with IDOT. Paul previewed this when he was talking about the work to be completed to put these dynamic messaging sign up near I-39. And this is the IGA with IDOT to allow us to lay the necessary fiber optics through some of their fiber and also some permit and land right-of-way work to perform the work. So this is just to get us available to do the installation.
And then we'll have access to what, up to 12 fibers?
Right. We had access to use some fiber per a separate agreement a while ago, and this is now time to go ahead and get the work done and share. And we have no terms about who can look at the sign once it's installed. For full public view.
Good.
Okay. And the last one is just an IGA again with Cook County. Department of Transportation recently announced the Bartlett Road Bridge reconstruction. The county is asking that some additional work beyond our project plan be included to construct a multi-use path. The tollway will undertake the procurement and the construction, but this will be at the county's cost to reimburse. Total amount of $372,556, which is the estimate. The tollway, the county will pay that 80% upon award date and 20% upon work completion. Number four on our item, I don't think.
Is there a shift? Is that correct? Over to cap and defer that?
We'll do that in a second at the full board.
Okay. Any questions on any of the legal items, one, two, and three? There being none, do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Move to the full consent board agenda. Item 4 will be deferred to the full board exec. Any unfinished business? Any new business? Anyone? We do not need executive session, I don't believe. Or do we? We do not need executive session?
No.
Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. We are now adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.